Right, I just think we should get started. How are you doing, my friend? Well, welcome back to the Bricks and Mortar podcast. This is episode number 96, and I'll tell you what we're going to have a chat about. It's my old friend fraud and people trying to pull one over on me in terms of what we do at Bricks and Mortar. And then we're going to talk a little bit about buy-to-let, and specifically, can you get a buy-to-let mortgage over a pub? We'll have a little chat about that. And then, well, I'll tell you a little bit about my trials and tribulations in terms of my letting agents, and in particular, what's been happening at Gardiner Street, and also what has been happening at Dorchester Avenue. Two flats that we've got, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. So without any more further ado, let us start with fraud. So fraud is all about, or the committing of fraud is all about intention. You have to have an intention to commit fraud. And this particular instance came about when somebody approached me and they said that they found this property and they were going to be using it as a buy-to-let, or their intention was to use it as a buy-to-let, and they had to get it. There was no questions. They'd fallen in love with the property. It was a great deal, but they had to get the property. And so first thing I asked them was, well, what's the EPC rating? And the gentleman said it was a G, I think. I said, well, listen, that's it. If it's got electric heating, the chances of getting it anywhere close to where it needs to be is going to be a real struggle. And then, without saying anything else, he says, well, I'll just buy it and as a residential. And he had a backstory where that could possibly work. But I thought to myself, well, he's come to me as somebody who wants to buy to let, and then suddenly he's going to be doing a residential. And I'm immediately thinking, you know, is he really going to be renting the property out rather than living in the property? And I ran it by the mortgage works, the BDM at the mortgage works. And they said to me that if the intention at any stage is to rent the property, then it's a buy to let. It's that usual adage that if it looks like a duck, it walks like a duck and it quacks, well, it's a fucking duck. So, and that's the way that we play it at Bricks and Mortar, because ultimately, what's the point in me putting my neck in the noose just to help somebody out? It's pointless, nonsensical, doesn't happen. And I said as much to the client. I said, well, with the greatest respect, I'm uncomfortable with going through with this. And I think you're going to have to try and sort it out yourself. But, you know, I'm not helping. And that was it. And to a certain extent, if you're a little bit green behind the ears and you go to a broker, there is an element of naivety, I think. Listen, I get that. I get that some clients don't know the ropes and they go in naively and thinking, well, why can't I just buy it as a residential and get a consent to let? And they don't know the rules. They don't know the criteria. And also, at least I hope this is the case, they don't understand the predicament that puts a broker in. There are too many stories where brokers that I've heard, that brokers have fallen foul of helping a client out only for the whole thing to unravel. And in the end, the lender just states that they're in cahoots with the client and they lose their license. So, you know, anybody out there, and as I say to all my clients, I say, listen, I've been a solicitor for 30 years. I know the line, right? I know how people cross the line. And it's just not something that I'm prepared to do. And that's the way it is. So we've got to, I think, from a broker's point of view, we've got to educate our clients, and hopefully they take that on board. And listen, there will be those out there who just know the rules very well, and they will be trying to hoodwink the brokers. I'm absolutely certain that there will be people out there who will understand the criteria, and they will go to three or four separate brokers, and they will manipulate their story as they go on after one broker who says, no, you can't do that because this, it goes to the next broker, and they get bombed out because the broker says, no, you need to do that, you need to do this. And then by the time to get to the third or the fourth broker, they've got their story down pat, and the broker, maybe unwittingly, is involved in something that they had no wish to be involved in, just purely because the client has been savvy enough to understand the criteria and know the way around it. So there we go. It's a difficult conversation always to have, but I try and be as straightforward as possible and ultimately explain to the clients why they can't do something and tell them the predicament that potentially would put me in. And you know, a lot of our clients understand that, and they are very embarrassed about that. And there are others who maybe aren't so, and we don't hear from them ever again. So that's the tricky world of fraud. And I actually gave that talk, or that part of the talk, at Nick Ponte's seminar. If you haven't been to any of Nick Ponte's seminar, Nick Ponte runs the Scottish Property Podcast. It's a wonderful podcast. And if you get any interest in property, then certainly you should add that to your playlist for sure. But Nick organises an event every Wednesday at the Village Hotel. When I say every Wednesday, it's the first Wednesday of each month. It's done on a monthly basis, and the great and the goods of the Glasgow property letting turn up at the Village Hotel, and we have a chat. I think we had 60 there last time round, and one of my roles in that is that I'm the mortgage broker, and I stand up and give a 5-10 minute précis of some great piece of mortgage news, and then talk about mortgage rates. So if you've not been, do come along. If you're needing any details, then drop me an email, jonathan@bricksandmortarmortgages.co.uk, or get in touch with Nick on his show, the Scottish Property Podcast. Anyway, the other thing that I spoke to on the seminar was this thing about, can I get a mortgage over a pub? And ultimately, I talked in the realms of limited company. So if you've got a limited company, can the limited company get a mortgage on a flat above a pub? And it's very, very difficult to get that in terms of a limited company. And there's maybe only a couple of lenders who would be prepared to look at that. And ultimately, it is down to valuers' comments, that phrase that banks and building societies love to throw out there, subject to valuers' comments. It just, as far as I think, it's a bit of a ruse to say, well, they can hide behind it and just say, well, the valuer said that there was an issue with the property, and that's it. And as soon as the valuer says it ain't happening, it ain't happening. So valuers' comments, and really what I guess that means is, I was involved with a property on Paisley Road, and it was above a pub that had hallmarks on the front door, was one of the two teams that a great many people in Glasgow support. Anyway, their badge crest was above the front door. And so you can imagine any surveyor turning up and he's thinking that, and he's thinking, geez, oh, every Saturday it's going to be an absolute ruckus here. So as a result, this property on Paisley Road, he wasn't too enamoured with it. And we spoke to Precise and they said, listen, I gave them a Google search and the postcode, and they came back and said, listen, I wouldn't even waste your money. This ain't happening. And I said, well, what happens if this had been on Ashton Lane or off Byers Road or in Finiston? And they've turned around and said, listen, that's a different kettle of fish. So when they say valuers comments, my takeaway from that is that if it's in a decent area above some plush public house in the West End or wine bar in the West End, then you're going to have a better chance of persuading the surveyor in terms of valuers' comments. But the bottom line is that there are fewer lenders from a limited, and again, this is a limited company, there are fewer lenders who are prepared to lend in terms of that above a pub where it's a limited company. There's a few more that if you are an individual, you're going to get an easier ride with the lenders, but ultimately it will still come down to lender to valuers' comments. So that's the watchword. You need to be aware. Valuers' comments is where it's going to go, or it's going to fall on its arse. Well, let's talk flats now, shall we? As those of you who have been listening to the previous 95 episodes, you'll be aware that I've got a reasonably sized portfolio. I've sort of morphed out of the individual side of things and into limited company. The last three that I've bought in the last 3 years have all been put through the limited company. And the more I read, the more I speak to people, the more I'm beginning to think that, you know, I think it might well be a busted flush. I think for certain people who are looking to get certain things out of it, I think it might be a busted flush. I still think that if you're playing long term and you're playing a pension play where at some stage in the future you're going to have paid off the mortgages, whether that's by reducing the amount of flats you've got by selling them off and paying off the mortgages. But I think that if you are trying to get to a situation where at the end of the day you've got half a dozen mortgage-free properties, then as a pension play and a capital raise, then I can see there's some benefit in that. But if you're one of these folk who have been gone through one of these educational courses and you're thinking of jacking in your job because you've been told about passive income, I think that it's a big entry to get in. You're talking your 6%. You're then looking at maybe going down the route of a limited company. Are you going to turn properties? Are you going to hold on to property? I say it's a very, very difficult game. And it may be that commercial property is a better play in terms of that, if you're wanting to jack your job in. But listen, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about my trials and tribulations that I've had at Gardiner Street. So situation was probably about 18 months ago, Gardiner Street, tenants moved out. And listen, I'd bought it 22 years ago, £75,000 we paid for it. And it is on the first floor. It's a two-bedroom, but the second bedroom is quite small. Anyway, I may have painted it a couple of times. It was tired beyond belief. I mean, I think it still had the same kitchen and probably some of the same furniture. Anyway, I decided, listen, I'm going to throw some money at it. So that's what we did. The letting agent suggested a contractor. Had said to me, listen, this is the deal we've struck. He wants half the money up front. So I gave to the letting agent £6,200. And it was, I guess, with all these things, it starts off well and then it begins to slip, and then they forget about you, and before you know it, you are chasing them to get people on the job. There had been issues with regards to timber treatment, but that all got sorted out. And, I mean, the timber treatment was done in August 2022, and they stopped working probably in the September, and actually getting them to do any substantive work from September 2022 onwards was just an absolute nightmare. It really was. There was all sorts of to-ing and fro-ings with them, where I would phone them up. They would then promise they would get people back on the job. It never happened. I would then phone them up and they would then again promise that they would have more people in the job. And I think this went on about three or four times. In the end, what in fact happened and the final straw was that there was a... The kitchen, that's right, they had to replace the kitchen. So what they did was they ripped up the floor in the kitchen, which was incredibly uneven, and they put all of the wooden boards and the kitchen that they had removed, they had put that in the living room, okay? So I turned up one day and it was like trying to get in, it was like climbing the Eiger to get into the living room, because everything had just been turfed into the living room and it was just like, you know, a junkyard. It was just full of old wood that was bundled in with the rest of the furniture. I mean, they'd just quite literally thrown the stuff in there. I mean, it was just, it was shocking. Anyway, so I'd phoned them up again and I'd said, listen, when are you going to start again? And they gave me a date and it didn't happen, and I then just sacked them. And shortly after sacking them, I went round to the flat and I discovered that the whole place had been cleared. So they had cleared all of the rubbish, but not only had they cleared all the rubbish, they had cleared all of my furniture out of the place. So I'd kitted the place out, and some of the stuff was tatty, but some of the stuff was pretty good, and certainly some of the stuff that I wanted to replace. So you can imagine I wasn't best pleased when I turn up at the flat and everything has gone. So I'm on to them. By this time, we've completely fallen out. I'm back in touch with the letting agent. He's now got me somebody else on board, and they were pretty good. They managed to get everything sorted out. Obviously, it was more expensive, so I had to shell out more money to them. By which time, we ended up getting the place rented out, and we've got, I think we've got, have we got 1,200 quid a month or something like that? I mean, it's just, when I finished renting it, I think I was getting 600. And then when we re-rented it out, we're getting 1,200. It's just absolutely bonkers. But we've got a couple in there and they've been really good. So I've then had to try and get my £6,200 back from this company. And they had done some work, don't get me wrong. They had put in a kitchen. So we worked out that the kitchen was maybe about £2,500. But there was still £6,200 less £2,500. And so I went on to the guy who ran the company, and you know, he was, you know, I was able to speak to him and we had a reasonable conversation. So I started off with, well, listen, you've had £6,200 of mine. I want that back, less £2,500. And then we need to agree how much the furniture was worth, which you coped. So he took umbrage at that and said, well, he had been under instructions from the letting agent to throw everything out. And I said, well, that's not the instructions that I gave the letting agent. And he was good enough to say, well, listen, if I don't have any evidence, whether that's by texts or telephone calls or anything in writing, then, you know, it sticks in the craw, but we'll give you a certain amount back. So we agreed £1,300. But what he said to me was, listen, you said that we had received £6,200. And he said, no, we haven't done. We only received £5,000. But nobody had told me that only £5,000 had gone out, which meant that somebody was holding £1,200. So I'll let you just have a wee think about that. Thankfully, I got the £1,200 back from the letting agent, and I'm sure it was just a mix-up in terms of what had happened there. But ultimately, had I not raised the matter with the original builders, then I would have never been any the wiser in terms of what had been sent to him. It's certainly been an eye-opener. I haven't really done many refurbs, and really the takeaway, I think, is that I think if you're going to be doing a refurb, then you've got to know exactly who you're instructing and who you're dealing with. And if I do that again, then certainly I'm not going to have a middleman involved. I'm going to go straight to the contractor, because I just think there's an element of transparency that you have when you do the stuff yourself, which just isn't necessarily there when you're dealing with a middleman. So that's Gardiner Street. I think probably what we'll do is, I've got another tale about Dorchester. I'll probably leave that until next time round, because I've been ongoing now for about 20 minutes. And I think from the first one back, it's probably just a good idea to leave it there. As I say, this Wednesday, we're back at the Village Hotel. So it would be wonderful to see some of you there. And it starts at 7 o'clock, probably goes on for a couple of hours. You find a wonderful group of people who are more than happy to share their stories, both good and bad. It's a wonderful, wonderful, it's been going, we've probably been doing it for a couple of years, and it really is a great educational part for me. I mean, there's not a seminar that goes by without, you know, you learning something. So do come along. I'm going to wind it up there. We're getting closer, aren't we, to the 100th episode. It's taken a wee while, and hopefully I'll get back in touch with you next week, and I'll tell you a little bit more about what's happening at Dorchester. And before I forget, Green Park Cottage. I've got a few stories about Green Park Cottage as well. So I'm going to knock it on the head there. Thanks very much for taking the time to listen to this. As ever, I'm a mortgage broker. Do your own research. And if you'd rather stick pins in your eyes than do it yourself, then get in touch under the usual services. I'll catch you next time.